We are up to chapter 16, or in the middle. What we've basically seen is the, so far in the chapter we've had, that Shimshon meets this young lady, Delilah, and joins her, marries her, and the Plishtim realize that they have an opportunity to figure out what, how they can strike back at Shimshon, how they can overcome him, overpower him, and that will be through Delilah, so they can ask her to find out, seduce him, find out what his strength is, where he gets his strength from, and how to stop him. So she has many attempts, and he keeps telling her the wrong way, ways that methods that don't work in overpowering him, and then if we take it from, let's say, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. So it is that.
Before we go on.
We're not going on. We're not. Don't worry. I know.
So what's the other method there? She just nagged a bit to it?
Well, let's see what the book can say. Pasuk Tesvav, Vatomer Elav, and she said to him, Eich Tomer Haftich, how can you say that you love me? The Libcha Einiti, and your heart is not with me. Zesh Alosh Pa'alim Heisaltavi, here three times you mocked me. And you did not tell me where your great strength from. And it was, when she continued to pester him with her words, and she pressured him, and his literally his soul was short to die, meaning that he sort of gave up the will to live.
That's why the Pashad said she was nagging him.
So in the next pasuk, let's see the next one. You're dying. Vayaged lo es kolibo, and he told her his whole heart. Vayomer lo, and he said to her, Moro lo ala al roshi, a razor has never gone on my head. Kinazira lo kima ani, for I am a nazir of Hashem. Mibetanimi, from my mother's womb, from my mother's stomach. In gulachti, if I were to be shaved. If I were to get a haircut to the star me many kochi, my strength would leave me, b'chalishing, I would be weakened, b'chalishi k'chala adam, and I would be like all other men, then I would finally be just like every other man. So what exactly happened to Shimshon that he was willing to give up? So, in Chazal, the Gemara tells us that, find my little Gemara here, little collection here. So, the Gemara says, "My vatal seyu." What does it mean that she pressured him, she forced him? Amar Rabbi Yitzchok to Rabbi Ami b'shas gemar bia nishkata mitachta. At the moment while they were involved in intercourse, the moment of his greatest desire, she removed herself from beneath him, and she said, I guess, we're not going on with this unless you tell me the truth. That's what the Gemara says. The Mefarshim get into where the Gemara sees this. But on a more shot level, what about Tiksar Napsho Lamut? That, he gave up on life. So there's a Musar here. And the Mitzvah here, I think he's saying this on his own. I'm not sure. I don't think he's quoting anyone. He says that know, despite that he had seen that, okay, I mean, he assumed that, after each time that he told her, she went and told the Plishtim. I don't know if that's so obvious, but, I mean, therefore he sort of makes the question even greater that even after that, after Simpson saw that she was going to tell the Plishtim, how can you tell her? But even if you don't assume that, just in general, why would he tell her this? Why would he, you know, risk it? So the pasuk "Vatikzer nafsho lamot," and his soul was shortened to die. The implication is that he gave up on life. Why did he give up on life? Why did he give up? So the Mishnah suggests that he realized that this wasn't he wasn't fulfilling his mission. This wasn't why he was put here. This wasn't where he was meant to be. That he was here, sent, and Nazirah Elkim here was sent on a mission to save Bnei Yisrael, to be a great leader. He had a job to do, and he felt that he wasn't doing it. And in place of this, the Hashem had given him this Ruach HaKodesh of Gvura, of strength, this heavenly strength. So instead he had used that, or what he had done was gotten involved with women, and he was basically giving up. I'm such a terrible guy, and he got depressed. I'm not succeeding. That's what the pasuk basically says. That tikzer nafsho lamot. He gave up on life. He wanted to die. That's depressing at its best. And he sort of succumbed to more and more of Eros as he went on, and we'll see that he's not finished yet. And the Gemara says that Delilah picked up on this, or she took advantage of this. The Gemara says, the Gemara says that Ilmalei Nikra Shma Delilah Ruya Haisus Nikra Delilah. Even had her name not been Delilah, she was fitting to be called Delilah. Even if that wasn't her name, that would be a good nickname for her. Because the Delilah, the Shoresh, Dildala, or it could be interpreted like Dildala, means to separate, or to dislocate, or... And the Gemara says... It's maybe related to that. It says that it would have been fitting for her to be called Delilah. Why Dildala Koko? She broke off his strength. Dildala Libo, she broke off his heart. Dildala Maisav, and she broke off his deed. Uprooted, actually, is the word Rashi uses. Or that it doesn't matter what type of name it is, but it's a good name in Hebrew. Meaning it's saying that even if this wasn't her name, it's actually interesting, right? Because we usually assume that names have meaning and that there's a Ruach HaKodesh in a name giving and it's fitting for the person. And when... you're very good. So that's the implication of the Gemara, that because it's not a Jewish name, the Gemara doesn't say that, you know why her name was Delilah? Because she did all this and it was like a Ruach HaKodesh. The Gemara actually says, even if her name wasn't Delilah, it would have been a great name for her. As a Hebrew name, right. Because she, and Rashi actually uses the word akra, she uprooted his strength, she uprooted his heart, and she uprooted his actions. And then it says, Dildala Koko, so actually let's read, in the next pasuk it's going to say the word Vayasar Koko Me'olav, that his strength left him. The Gemara says that's where you see that she uprooted his strength. Dildala Libo, she uprooted his heart, that he had told her his whole heart, as we'll see in the next pasuk. Dildala Maisav, that Hashem left him as we're about to see. So, the Maharsha points out that the reason why the Gemara is picking up on her name also is that we weren't told the name of the other women. So there's a significance to the Gemara telling us her name. And he actually says that quotes the Gemara where a mayor like inferred something from someone's name, that the person I think was a Rasha, if I recall correctly. And he says here too, Shimshon should have picked up on her name, that there's something that her name is teaching me, and he should have stayed away from her. That's what the Maharsha says. And in terms of the word dildalu, it could be understood like akara, like akra, like uprooted. But there is one. The Ian Yaakov says, like, you wanted to say that it comes from the word poor, that she made him poor. She emptied him of his strength and of his heart and of his action. So let's see what happens. Pasuk Yedayin Vayaged Lo Es Kolibo, and he told her his entire heart. Vayomer Lo, and he said to her, okay, actually we read this already, and he told her how to defeat him. So Pasuk Yedches Vatere Delilah Ki Higid Lo Es Kolibo, and Delilah saw that he had told her his entire heart. She knew that this was the truth. Rashi here quotes the Gemara, Nikarin Divrei Emet. The truth is nikar, is clear. When you hear the truth, you know it, says the Gemara. Here specifically, the Gemara, the Mefarshim actually kind of reinterpret that, and they say especially here it was nikar, maybe in certain circumstances, if the truth becomes very clear, when everything fits into place. This that he had finally told her, fit into place. All the other reasons, ways to stab him of his strength, you know, she believed him, but they didn't necessarily ring as true as this. Did this rung true? How come? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, Mina Yada, how did she know? How did she know that he finally told her in his whole heart? Told her his whole heart. Amar Rabbi Chanan, Amar Rav, Nikarin Divrei Emes. The truth is clear. The truth is clear. That's what the Gemara says. Abaye Amar Yada Be'osho Tadik Lomapik Shem Shamayim Levatala. He knew that he wouldn't take Hashem's name in vain. Kevan da Amarva, once he said, Kim Ani, I am a Nazir of God. Amra Hasta Vada Kushtak Amar, now he is certainly telling the truth. So the second answer was that he used Hashem's name, that's how she knew it was true. He wouldn't take Hashem's name in vain. Yeah. He's lived with this man, you know. The other pshat is that Nikarim Divrei Emes, the truth is obvious. It's clear. Rashi there says it was circumstantial that the truth was so clear, because everything fit into place. She saw he had long hair, and that he didn't drink wine, and she said, wait a second, this fits. This makes sense. That's why she was sure of herself this time.
So were familiar with the concept of Nazir?
I don't know if she was or not.
Everybody was running around with long hair. I mean, if there's... Yeah.
I don't think it really makes such a difference. Whether that, you know, I don't know if everybody... I doubt everybody had never cut hair. I don't know. You know, so he had long hair. He didn't drink wine. Everybody drank wine in those days. And
Water today.
Yeah. So it made sense. Everything made sense there. So others say. Oh no, right. The Malbim here. The Malbim comment. Then we're in Pasuk Yeches, so the Malbim says that here he was answering both questions that she had asked. The Malbim had learned back when they asked her to find out what makes him tick. So they back in Pasuk Hey, so they said. See, you know, seduce him, find out what his strength is, and how we could defeat him. The Malbim had learned that what they were asking was that this doesn't seem natural, so find out what the underlying source of his strength is, and we could remove that. And even if it is natural, so then find out where his strength lies, and if there's some way that we can overcome it. So,
I mean, most Nazirim don't have supernatural strength.
Most Nazirim don't have supernatural strength. That's true.
Why did you assume then it was the status of the Nazir?
Well, okay, I don't know if she knew too much about Nazir, as we said, but even if she did, I would say that it's still fit. You know, there's something spiritual giving him strength. So where's it coming from? And he, you know, this fits together. The point was as much as that what he told her this time was something that fit in with what he was doing. As opposed to all the other times, it was like, if you tie me with this kind of rope, or if you tie me with that kind of rope, or if you stick something in my hair. Like, there wasn't...
But if you think about it, what is the essential point of being a Nazir is not drinking the wine. The hair appears to be, like, an incidental point, right?
I don't... What do you mean? I don't know what the point of the hair is, but I think it's also significant.
Yeah, it's significant, but the Iker is not drinking.
I mean, the Gemara talks about someone who was very beautiful, and so he became a Nazir because he became, you know, too haughty. So it does make a person look, you know, a little worse if you're, and that would be the purpose. So there is a purpose, part of overcoming
the
desire.
Not saying it's the main part of being a Nazir is, you know, staying away from the wine, staying away from anything.
And therefore what? She should have fed him wine? That should have been...
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're looking at it from a logical point of view, you would think here that if he gave him wine, that would be more likely to take
it. Yeah, but he told her it was his hair.
So,
how did he know that?
It was everything. It was him being a Nazir. If he breaks his Nazir, it doesn't matter which way you break it. You broke it. You're no longer a Nazir.
Why did he say here? Not to give me wine. A lot easier. Well, if you had to do it, was give him wine. A lot easier than chopping off his ear. Right. He specifically said here with deep things.
I'm not sure. The Malbim says that the way that she knew that he was telling the truth was because he gave her answers to both questions. That he told her how to get rid of his strength and how to be... imprisoned, I guess. If he wanted to lie, he could have just told her where his strength comes from. It comes from being a Nazir, he could have said. And without telling her that if that gets broken, if you cut my hair, then I'm going to lose it. He didn't have to tell her that. He wouldn't have been lying. It could be that he's a Nazir. He has great strength, and it's not going to go away, even if you cut my hair.
I never actually thought about it before. You know, this whole thing with the hair, where did it come from? I mean, because when the Malach was originally did If he just said be, you know, he should be anointed from birth.
I mean, he said, Targo Yahweh al Roshu. I think.
Yeah, all right. Be anointed, don't cut his ear.
Right. Right.
So that's part of it. But where did he get this idea that it was the hair, not the water?
It could have been both. The point, that's, why did he tell her that? I'm not sure. Why did he specifically tell her that? I don't know.
Somebody must have thought of this before me.
I mean, maybe he wanted to, he didn't want to, she can't like force feed him wine, but she can, like while he's sleeping, but she could cut his hair. So he was giving her an actual, maybe that's another answer of how he was giving her an actual etza, because this was actually a way that she could get him. That's how she knew he was telling the truth. I don't know. But it says the Malbim, the way she knew it was true was because he could have told her, answered one of the questions, either where you get your strength from, but not how to overcome him. I get my strength because I'm a Nazir. If you, you didn't have to tell her that it would help to cut his hair. And
maybe you could find that answer over the break.
I didn't see anything. I don't have a question. I'm not bothered by the question. I don't understand the question, really.
The question is, why
if he wanted to break the Nazirus on his own, he could have drunk wine on his own, right? Or cut his own hair. So he was giving her a way to do it. So telling her he drinks wine is not going to help her, because what's she going to do?
Give a little wine.
I don't know. It requires the person to use their own... To act on their own, to drink it,
to violate the Nazirus. I mean, if he was falling asleep, he gave it to him, that wouldn't count as he violated.
I don't know if he would have drunk it, and if he did, he was drinking it on his own. I wouldn't equate that to her just cutting his...
All right, so he didn't cut off the hair on his own either.
No, but... What I'm saying is, you can't force feed someone wine without them drinking on their own. I mean, the point is that he would be acting on his own in that case. He wouldn't be doing it. He would be doing it.
That would make it even worse.
But if he wants it to be worse, he could just drink it himself. And then he says,
he specifically wanted her to do it. In our current legal terms, so then he would be like an abettor.
What are you asking now?
We have like aid and abet. So
right.
If he was abetting her by Teyas, so. Well, why did he specifically want her to do it, as opposed to him doing it himself, if he just was so depressed he wanted to give up his life?
I'm not sure. Maybe he just didn't want... I'm not sure.
He didn't want the Akrayas?
Yeah.
But...
Good question. I'm not sure. Okay. So again, back in Yitzchak, so Vatera deliva ki hidra shkoibo, and deliva saw that he had told her his entire heart. Vatishrach, and she sent. Vatikra with Sinai Plishtim, and she called to the Sinai Plishtim, the officers of the Plishtim, Lamar, Aru Hapam, come this time, this is it. Ki hidra shkoibo, because he's told me his whole heart. All the way there, Sinai pushed him, and the Sinai pushed him, went up to her, and they dropped the money that they promised with them. And she put him to sleep on her knees, and she called to the man, she called someone, and he cut off 7 locks of his head, of his hair, and they began, this was the beginning of causing him to suffer. Vayasa kochel me'olav, and his strength left him.
Comment about the seven.
What? Do I have a comment? I don't have a comment.
Oh, does anybody comment about the seven?
I didn't see anything. Not that I remember, at least.
Seven significant number.
Yeah. I think seven was the number that... Yes. Shimshon had used the number seven previously. If you tie me with seven wet ropes, and then if you also the one where you said to bind his hair, to leave his hair, it was seven hairs, seven locks. So yeah, and now again they cut seven. And now begins to, he loses the strength.
That's not part of the Zeres, is it?
No. No. But Tomer pushed him, but Tomer, and she said, pushed him alecha Shimshon. The pushed him are on you, Shimshon. And this time, Vayikat Mishinoso, and he awoke from his sleep. Vayomer, and he said, Eitzik if I'm befam, the Inoer, I will go out as I did each time, and I'll awaken. The Hugo Yadak, Yashem Sarme Olav, and he did not know that Yashem had left him. Now, why? What was he expecting? Didn't he tell her how to get rid of his strength? The Radak says that. And why is it he didn't know? Right, he told her how to get rid of his strength. So, the Radak says he forgot while he was sleeping what he had told her. Just, you know, at the moment of waking, he forgot. And he thought this was just like all the other times. He was used to this already, waking up, bursting out of his rope.
Sounds like maybe she did give him
something. Right, the Radak learned that all four times she had put him to sleep, even though it only said it on the third and fourth time that he awoke from his sleep, he learned that it was all four times that she imprisoned him, that she roped him, were all while he was asleep. Others. So.
Yeah, because before she was, with the teens and the Yael, the first time there she was protesting. She was, so yeah, how she gets to sleep without doing that and without giving him a why?
I mean, he had to sleep.
Yeah, but said she put him to sleep.
Oh, and this time, yeah, this time it does say that. Right. Yeah.
Is this implying that after he finally told the secret that she stopped withholding?
Very likely. I think that's probably the case.
That would fit in with
Yeah. So, but he thought this was just like all the other times. He wasn't completely awake. And he didn't realize that he didn't have his strength anymore. So what happened? Pasuk Chafala Vayochazu pushed him, and the plishtim grabbed him, they captured him, Vayinakru Esenov, and they poked out his eyes. Vayoridu Oso Azasa, and they brought him down to Aza, Vayasru Ban Nefustayim, and they locked him up in chains. It's from the word nachash, a snake, some kind of snake chain. I'm not familiar with that, but in chains. By he kofein the vesa asurim, and he was grinding at the mill in jail. This is a famous pasuk. Pasuk pshat, simple understanding again is that as the Radak says, you know, we want to get work from our prisoners, right? So we make our prisoners work. And they had a mill in the in the prison, and that's what they would have the prisoners do, and that's what they had Simson do to work the mill. The Iyun Yaakov actually adds, interestingly, that this fits very nicely with the fact that they had poked out his eyes, because of, you know, all the physical labors that a person could be doing blind. Now, here you have, again, he lost his superhuman strength, but I guess he was still strong and capable. So the Iyun Yaakov says that this is the perfect job for a for someone who's blind in both eyes, is to push the bar around the mill. In fact, it's a Gemara. The Gemara says that if somebody pokes at someone's eyes, what do they have to pay him? So there's a number of different things that you pay for when you damage another person, but among them is loss of work. But that loss of work that you pay is the amount that they would be are capable of doing now. Meaning, while they're recovering, one of the things you pay for is the damages, which is how much you've lowered their value as a person. Based on a slave market, that's how we price them. But once you've paid for their loss in value, so you've bought them out, basically, so now you have to pay for missed wages while they recover. But those wages are what they would be capable of doing right now in their current state, what state they'll be in once they recover. So, and it says there that someone who's blind in both eyes, so for Shabbat, for loss of work, what you pay is the amount of someone to grind at a mill. We see the Gemara also understood that this was a job for a blind person. Yes, we'll get to that. Okay. Now, the Gemara has a different interpretation of these words. Va'itochen deveso asurim, and he was grinding in the prison. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ein techina ala lashon avera. The word techina is a language of avera. V'chein u'omer, chaschav iyov, tipchan la'acher isti, v'alea yichru'un acherim. The Gemara implies that Titchon, the pasuk in Iyov uses the word Titchon to describe someone who's going after women. And so the Gemara here says that this pasuk as well is referring to Shimshon's involvement with women while in prison. Milamed, it teaches you sheko echad ve'echad heidi lo es isto lebeis ha'asurim, that every person would brought his wife to the beis ha'asurim, in order that she would become pregnant from Shimshon. And that people, fascinating, they were bringing their wives. Maybe they wanted their children, you know, to look good. They wanted their children to be very strong, and maybe it would even look like it was his child, so men would even bring their wives in order to become pregnant from Shimshon.
We had that as a follow-up, right?
The Radak isn't so happy with this Gemara. Rishon, you know, he goes out and says, I don't understand this Gemara. He says, Matalas Hayalohem is there. What was the point of this? Vago Star Koko. Sami Manokoko, he had already lost his strength. He wasn't even a strong guy anymore. So what was the point of this? So he prefers just the pshat that there was a mill and that he was working the mill. But Chazal, the Gemara says that...
So it makes sense even besides that. He must have been a powerfully built guy.
The Radak doesn't seem to think so. I don't know. At least, maybe not to the point that it's worth it to bring your wife wife to be, even if he was strong, but, you know, was he the strongest? Was it worth it to you know, to do this, to go to these great lengths? Maybe if he had super, if he had superhuman strength, so fine, you know, but he was just a regular strong guy, so I don't know. But that's what the Gemara says, and the Mefarshim seek to figure out why the Gemara insisted on taking it out of the Pshat. So the riff on the Ian Yaakov, the riff says that number of answers, he's actually quoting the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says that first of all it says Vayi Tochen the Vesa Asurim, and he was grinding in the Vesa Asurim, and there's an implication, it's hinting to, he says, that he was Boel Hadvarim HaAsurim Lo. That Asurim here, which means the prison, but also means things that are Asur. That he was in the Beis Asurim, he was involved with Isurim here. Furthermore, he says that the Nechushtayim, these types of chains that he was bound in, they are chains on both the arms and the legs. That's what Nechushtayim are, he says. We'll take his word for it. And if so, how could he have been grinding? Yeah, how could he have been pushing the mill if he was chained by both his arms and his legs? The snapper doesn't understand. What's that?
Depends on the length of the chain.
Right. Okay.
He could take a full stride. He just couldn't run.
Right. Correct. Now he doesn't mention this, but there is another Chazal that the Ian Yaakov mentioned. The Ian Yaakov actually, this is the Ian Yaakov says that the reason why Chazal took it out of its shot, didn't learn that he was actually grinding, was because that the Gemara also says that over here, the Gemara says that Shimshon was a chiger b'shtei raglav. He became handicapped. He lost both his legs. And if that's the case, so then it would have been hard for him to walk and push the mill. But, so that's the Gemara, another Gemara here. So the Ian Yaakov says that's why the Gemara, because of that drasha, I guess, where it learned out that he had lost his leg, so that's why the Gemara also couldn't accept that he was actually grinding a mill in the prison. The Kliyakar has one other point, which is just why would he have to tell me, what's the point of telling me that he was grinding a mill? What's that supposed to teach me? That had nothing to do with the story here.
He's keeping up his exercises.
Ah, that's how he had strength to bring down that.
Strength.
Yeah.
But they, from their point of view, they wouldn't want him to preserve it.
They wanted him to grind, but they thought he was harmless.
Right. He actually
said, no sight. Couldn't see a target.
He actually says that they were trying to weaken him more by doing this, by tiring him out. But again, he says, what's the point of this? Why would the Navi have to share this little piece of seemingly insignificant information? And therefore, the Gemara understood that it was coming to hint to something, to teach me something. And that's what the Gemara says. It's teaching us that he was actually, he was grinding. Marshat says it's a grammar thing. Tochein sounds like, I guess, he was doing it voluntarily. But it should have said the Tochan Lahem, he was doing it for them. Okay, number of different Mefarshim, different approaches as to how the Gemara came to this conclusion. Now, the Ramchal has a fascinating idea related to this. The Ramchal says that Pasuk says in Eov, Tupal Adam Yishalim Lo, the actions of a man he'll be paid back for. So the Ramchal comments that The way that a person goes in this world, that's the same way he's going to go after death. The same avera a person chooses to do in this world, and when the person does that avera, it's a pleasure. That same avera he's going, that's what his gehenim is going to be. He's going to be doing that avera over and over again. Or experiencing that avera. Similar, it's related to the point in Nefesh HaChaim, we actually spoke about this in Nefesh HaChaim shir back then, that Nefesh HaChaim talks about that when a person, Nefesh HaChaim says there's no place called Olam Haba, the world to come, that's waiting for you. It's an existing paradise that exists, and there's no place called Gehenim that's waiting for you, that there's a place, you know, it's full of fire and you know, and it's a place that you know, you just have to get there. You take the red eye flight and you're there in a few hours. There's no place, existing place that's waiting for a person called Olam Haba or Gehenna. What they are is worlds that we create. That we create with our mitzvot. We create kedusha, holiness, and purity and pleasure. We create an experience for ourselves that will. That we'll be able to benefit from afterlife, and we, I guess it's the same with our Gehenim. We create tumah, we create impurity. In this world, we don't feel it. We don't feel it, even though we've enveloped ourselves, right? He says this relates to also mitzvah, gereres mitzvah, avera, gereres avera. One mitzvah leads to another because we get enveloped by kedusha when we do a mitzvah. We don't necessarily feel it, but it's there. And avera, gereres avera, one avera leads to another because we envelop ourselves with tumah, with impurity, and then it leads us to do another avera. But we don't feel it in this world. But once we're free of our bodies and we're just neshama, our neshama is going to feel that. Our neshama is going to feel that purity or that impurity, and that's the experience of Olam Haba or Gehenna. And he says, so the Ramchal says that he's going to re-experience that avera over and over again. But it's going to be, he's going to be forced, he's not going to be benefiting from it, and it's going to be great tsar. And he says that someone who steals during his lifetime is going to be stealing after death also, but it's going to be very painful. He's going to be stealing fire, or if he's in a gehenna of ice, he's going to be stealing ice, and it's going to be very painful to him. Yeah, if he gets the gehenna. And he says that is what's going on with Shimshon here. Shimshon, who the Gemara says, halach achar einav.
Yeah, but how would that be, I mean...
Wait, one second. Let's finish the thought. So Shimshon went after his eyes, and he succumbed to Averos. He was involved with many women, and his punishment in Olam Haba was going to be that he would have to experience this what was a pleasure in this world, but is a terrible punishment in the world to come, re-experience this Avera over and over again. That was to be his punishment. And Hashem had mercy on him, and he gave him the punishment in Olam Hazeh, in this world, so that he would have menucha, so that he would have rest in Olam Haba. He says that's what Chazal are saying, Vahi tochein v'veisa asurim. It teaches us that everybody brought their wives to him, that he had to experience this over and over again in Olam Hazeh, which I don't know if it was how that was a punishment. Maybe
right,
it wasn't a pleasure.
Maybe
because he was being forced to do it and he wasn't enjoying it. And that Ramchal says was a punishment, but it was to save him from having to experience that punishment in Olam Haba.
So going back to that concept, though, assuming that he didn't get this reprieve, how? I'm not sure I understand how it would have worked. How it would have been a punishment in Olam Haba. I mean, he would have been doing it, but instead of getting pleasure, it would have been painful.
In Olam Haba, it would have been painful. I have to imagine in this world, the way that I'm traveling, it was also painful in some way. Otherwise, it's not a punishment. So.
Well, I guess that's only, you know, say like,
it could be.
It
could be if you're blind.
It
could be if you're blind and you have no legs and you're chained up, that it wasn't so enjoyable for him. then. That's what I have to imagine. But I'm not sure.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right. You're welcome.